When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
You never want to find yourself out on the water fishing without the essentials. So it's best to always pack a Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite hoodie to protect against the sun. I mean, it provides great protection and it's really breathable so you don't get hot. That's a win-win. Columbia PFG has a lot of great gear. So before you head out on the water, head over to Columbia.com/PFG to shop their performance fishing gear.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Relax and unwind tonight with the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as another busy work week flies by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
Hi, and welcome back to the Carol Markowitz Show on iHeartRadio. I have a 14-year-old daughter, so it's Taylor Swift mania in our house. It's been the background music to our entire lives for a bit, but right now it's really in overdrive. A line from a Taylor song that was released last year has been in my mind. The song is "Now That We Don't Talk," and the line is, "I called my mom, she said to get it off my chest." And I always jokingly point out to my daughter, like, look, Taylor calls her mom. You know, when you grow up, maybe you should call your mom. And they talk about stuff and maybe we should talk about stuff. So I'm planting the seeds. But I think about things like this, like getting things off your chest a lot, because I'm someone who holds everything in. Every once in a while, I'll surprise my husband with like a bunch of bad news that I've been holding inside. I mean, nothing too bad. Maybe an argument with someone or worries I have, but the kind of bad that burns and turns into something far worse than it is when you don't let it out. Last week, I talked about knowing what will make you feel better and still not doing it. You know, the whole reading fiction before bed, I know that makes me feel better than scrolling, and yet I still don't do it. And that's really the hardest part to overcome. When you don't know what's wrong, that's one thing. It's when you know something is good for you, but you just don't do it anyway. I mean, it makes me feel kind of dumb. There's this meme going around where a girl says she's not feeling well, and another voice asks her a bunch of questions about what it could be. Let's play the clip.
I'm just feeling really down these days, and I don't know why.
Have you exercised today?
No.
Did you go outside?
No.
Did you talk to anyone?
No.
Did you eat well?
No.
Did you limit your scrolling time?
No.
Did you make any plans?
No.
Did you drink enough water?
No.
Did you get enough sleep?
No.
Wait, yes. Yes to that one. Yeah, no, it's what a mystery.
Yeah. I mean, I find myself asking those questions of myself a lot. It gets very easy to stay in my own head and stew about things and then wonder why I'm not sleeping at 3 a.m. And all of these things, you know, eating, going outside, it's just better living through doing really simple things. What a concept. I don't have the answer on how to get yourself to do the things that will improve your life. But the easy ones, like going outside or eating or talking to someone if something is bothering you, should be where we all start. Again, I'm far from perfect on this, but it's something I'm working on and maybe we can do it together. I love your emails. I've gotten so many good ones about things that you guys do to improve your lives. Please keep them coming. It's carolmarkowitzshow@gmail.com, and I'll read some in the next few episodes. Coming up next, an interview with Nick Gillespie. Join us after the break.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. oracle.com/strategic.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for up to half the cost. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Savings based on cost of Consumer Cellular's single line 1, 5, and 10 gig data plans with unlimited talk and text compared to lowest cost single line postpaid unlimited talk, text, and data plans offered by T-Mobile and Verizon January 2024.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and everybody. It's spring, and with the weather changing and so many great things coming up like Mother's Day and the wind down tour, I definitely need a fresh spring wardrobe for every occasion. This spring, I'm looking for that perfect flowy spring dress for Mother's Day, as well as replacing my everyday basics. That's what I love about JCPenney. They have so many stylish and comfortable options that I always find just what I'm looking for there. Spring is a feel-good season and comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. The fashion at JCPenney is the same way. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with styles that gets you, something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes, and Stafford and Mutual Weave for him, style and comfort for all, even big and tall. Plus even more for the whole family like Levi's and Exertion. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
Welcome back to the Carol Markowitz Show on iHeartRadio. My guest today is Nick Gillespie, editor-at-large at Reason, the libertarian magazine of free minds and free markets, and host of the Reason interview with Nick Gillespie. Hi, Nick.
Hey, how you doing, Carol? Nice to talk with you.
So nice to have you on. When I was thinking about how to introduce you and I was looking up your bio, I was thinking, you know, Nick Gillespie, the libertarian, you know,
yeah, the
icon
of
the libertarian. You're an icon in the libertarian movement for sure. Man about town in New York. And just, I think, I really do think of you when I think of libertarians in general.
Explain why we, aren't better known, but I appreciate the sentiment.
What would you be doing if you weren't doing this? Like, what would be a plan B for you?
So it would most conceivably one of two different outcomes. One is that when I graduated from college, I'm 60. I graduated college in 1985.
That is crazy, by the way. You are like, you're just really young looking.
Yeah. I did not inherit any money, literally, from my parents, but I inherited something, and so I thank them for that.
Great hair, yeah.
It's all natural. Like, none of this is...
That's right.
You know, I love human ingenuity and kind of staving off aging and increasing what we can do, but I haven't done any of that. But the two things, so I graduated college. I was an English and psychology major at Rutgers. University. I was born in Brooklyn, grew up in New Jersey, went to Rutgers, and I ended up writing. I became a journalist because I wrote when I was in college. I worked on our daily newspaper, which had a paying gig and everything. So it was very nice. And I worked for a bunch of teen magazines and music magazines in the late 80s. And I think if I was not doing what I'm doing now, I would be an entertainment journalist. So I would be staking out, you know, Kardashian hideaways and things like that.
That sounds great. Why aren't you doing that?
Yeah, I think about that on an almost hourly basis. But then, what happened after a few years of doing that in New York and for, you know, kind of third-rate magazines, which were a lot of fun and whatnot, but I decided to go to grad school for English for creative writing and literary studies, and I was going to be a professor.
Wow.
And what happened, I got a master's in English and creative writing at Temple University in Philly. Then I moved to Buffalo. I met my future wife and ex-wife, mother of my children. We are on very good terms. We spend Christmas and holidays together. We went to Buffalo to get PhDs in English, and I was an Americanist. I studied American literature. I was going to become an English professor, and then Reason magazine, which I'd been reading since I was in high school, had a job opening that they advertised in their pages. This was in 1993. Mm-hmm. And I applied for it and I got the job, and then I've been there ever since. So the short version is I would be running a teen magazine, if they even still exist, or a heavy metal magazine, or I'd be a college professor.
What teen magazines did you write for?
This was a company called Sterling's Magazines. I believe it's out of business.
Ah.
I wrote for two magazines there. One was called Teen Machine. Super Teen. And so that's what I was doing in the late 80s.
Interesting. I was going to guess, do you remember the teen magazine Sassy?
Yes.
Like it was really counterculture. I loved
founder.
It.
Yeah. I was not sassy material. Sassy was like the New Yorker of teen magazines.
I used to wait at the newsstand to get my sassy. I didn't understand the whole concept of subscribing. I just, I knew the day it came out and I'd wait by the newsstand and I was so I loved it so much. And looking back, it was definitely left of center, but it was very be yourself, think whatever you want to think. Don't let anybody tell you what to think. And I don't think you could do that anymore. I don't think you could have a sassy magazine for teenagers that encourages them to be themselves and think whatever they want now.
Yeah, that's interesting. And it'd be curious to think about sassy versus something like Teen Vogue, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where sassy was sexually forward, especially for the day. It was talking about, harder issues than most teen magazines.
Yeah, for sure.
Where it was, how do you win a dream date with Kirk Cameron or something?
Right.
It's fascinating to think about celebrity culture and the way that that is a venue for kind of talking about larger issues. And
you could be making a difference in your backup career. You could be changing things,
I could be getting in early, right? And making the anxious generation, as John Hyde would call it, super anxious. Because I'd be like, hey, you know what? Everything the government is telling you is lies.
It's a lie. were you always a libertarian, even back then when you're writing for those teen magazines?
Yeah, I would say so. Like I said, I started reading Reason in high school. My brother, who's older than me, was the first person in our family to go to college. And he discovered Reason when he was at college. And he brought it home for me or started sending me his old issues. And I was just kind of like, I was much more into literature and kind of movies and TV.
Mm-hmm.
But I was reading and I was like, oh, this makes a lot of sense. I stumbled across Milton Friedman's Free to Choose, Milton and Rose Friedman's book, which had been also made into a PBS series. And I started, what I liked about libertarianism was the idea that it was individualistic. And it's not that being a libertarian doesn't mean you don't build communities, but it's, you recognize you are responsible for yourself. And you need to do things. Nobody's going to do things for you.
Right.
And that really appealed to me. I was also a teenage existentialist. I came across people like Albert Camus and Jean-Paul Sartre and whatnot. And so libertarianism resonated with me. But in a lot of ways, what resonated the most was that Reason magazine, and back then it was talking probably more about economics than cultural issues, but also political issues. But it was saying, the truth is much more complicated than what you're being told.
And really?
It was, and I was like, wow, this is amazing. It was like a secret history of reality that accorded with my sense of things, that certain people were always trying to tell you, this is good for you. You have to do this, not like you should do this, but like you have to. And so that resonated. And by the time I got to college and certainly after college, I called myself libertarian. But it was not front and center in a sense. I mean, one of the things that I think is really negative about the past, 40 or 50 years is that politics has moved from a place where it's part of our identity to where it is almost always, or not always, but often the first part of our identity. We call ourselves conservatives, progressives, libertarians, liberals, whatever, right out of the bat. And I think we'd be in a better world if we were I'm a human first and I'm, whatever your political or ideological you know, kind of commitments are. It's maybe fourth or fifth.
Interesting. Yeah, I definitely, I mean, I admit that my political affiliation is very much front and center of who I am. I consider myself libertarian adjacent. I think that there were periods in my life where I thought I was more libertarian than maybe I do today. My 14-year-old daughter is like clearly going to be a libertarian. I don't know how to veer her off that path. No, just kidding.
No, you know what?
It's great. She's great.
It's really hard, but the best way to do it, I think, and I said, you know, I have two grown children now, but the best way is to let them be responsible, you know, and obviously there's gradations in this, you know, a 14-year-old can't make decisions that a 28-year-old is going to make or a seven, you know, but they make more than a 7-year-old or something, but let them make decisions and let them live with the consequences.
Right. She's just always very like, no matter what anybody says, she's always like, how's that the government's role? And I'm like, God, how did I have one of you?
You know, what's funny about that is weirdly over my time at Reason, which has now been, I'm in my 31st year at Reason.
Wow.
Reason was founded in 1968. So I've been around for a long time, but even over the time I've been at Reason, I'd say the libertarian movement has moved from being kind of about limited government, like smaller government and kind of a classical liberal view where government is not necessarily a criminal organization, but it should be small and it should be targeted and it should be held to high standards, to a lot of libertarians now really are anarchists. And they think any government action at any level is not just likely to be inefficient or incompetent, but it's actually like immoral or evil.
Yeah.
I don't subscribe to that, but it's kind of fascinating to see why has that happened. And in a weird way, I think a lot of Republicans and Democrats, a lot of liberals and progressives or conservatives believe that too. And I wrote a piece a couple of years ago for Reason talking about how what happens, you know, when you move from being a high trust society to a low trust society, and America has been doing that. Oddly, people call for more government, even though they know the government is going to be bad at what it's doing. And what we really need is a government that does fewer things, but does them competently and efficiently.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, I have to say that that's I feel that shift in myself. Like I used to be very the government should just not do anything. And look, if everybody subscribed to that point of view, I'm in for smaller government. But it turns out that it's like the left doesn't want smaller government. So when they get control, they grow the government and they have more power. So the COVID years are really my example of this. It's like in New York, it was like the governor is going to have control over whether schools open. But in Florida, the left pushed to have local control, not the governor control. So it's always like I felt like I was losing no matter where, no matter what. I mean, it definitely made me more pro-individual, you know, so I don't know. So maybe I am a libertarian somewhere in there. It's like the labels don't matter, but they kind of matter.
Yeah. And, you know, I tend to use libertarian now as an adjective rather than a noun, because I think being libertarian is a kind of pre-political sensibility. It's kind of a temperament, and it's, you know, it's a direction. It's not a set of dogma. And you can be a libertarian Democrat or a libertarian Republican. You can be a libertarian, you know, with capital L or something. And I, you know, for me, I think government policies tend to work best when they're smaller in scale, you know, because then the stakes are lower, but also they can be more targeted. And things work best when decisions get devolved down to the individual or as close to the individual as possible.
That's it. Yeah.
Not utopia, but, you know, so for instance, like I'm not against a social safety net, but I think rather than having food stamps, you know, where the government gives you a plastic card and says you can buy whole milk, but not skim milk or something like that. It should just be for a small number of people who need help, give them cash grants and trust them and give them the autonomy to make decisions. With that, you know, and if you push,
but you could just see
through
where the problem's going to happen. You go right, you know, it's not going to stay small. It's going to grow. Yeah. It's like this is where the issues all come up.
Yeah, and this is also part of it, though, is, you know, if we become, you know, more cognizant of the problems, you know, right now I used to write a lot about this, but about old age entitlements and, you know, things like Social Security and Medicare. at the federal level, that is what's driving federal spending, which keeps going up and up. You know, when Bill Clinton left office, his final budget was about $2 trillion. We are now spending over $6 trillion, and it's never going to come down again.
Right.
You know, we don't need to have tripled, you know, spending over the past 20 years, right? Mm-hmm. And it's gone up under Republicans and Democrats, yeah, et cetera. But when you realize it's old age entitlements, we need to start holding ourselves accountable, where when Social Security and Medicare were passed, and Social Security was passed in 1935, nobody retired. Basically, you died at 65, which was the age you could, mm-hmm, you know, take it. And it has expanded vastly. Older people are wealthy now. We can't have the same kind of policy that just gives people money regardless of, you know, because of age. Medicare was passed in 66, you know, immediately started outstripping its cost estimates and things like that. And it's like, you know, if you're wealthy in America, you should be paying your own way. And then we should agree that there's a small portion of people who need temporary help and sometimes long-term help if they're not capable of taking care of themselves. And the government can do that, but it should be, you know, 10% of what we're spending now, rather than sending out most stuff to middle-class and upper-middle-class people under the guise of helping poor people. You know, we need to be more honest and realistic about where government spending is going. And it's almost never to help the poor.
But that's the demographic that votes. You're never going to be president, yeah, with this attitude.
I know. But, well, you know what? This is one of my dreams, is to do kind of like, you know, go back to my interest in literature and art. I almost want to do like an art project where I find wealthy, you know, when you turn 65, you have to enroll in Medicare. Otherwise, right, you're breaking, right, the law.
Yep. Bill Gates Medicare.
Well, I want to find wealthy seniors who refuse to sign up for Medicare and ask the government to put them in jail, like run a kind of nonviolent resistance campaign against Medicare, from people who don't need it, people who can afford to pay for their health care in retirement. And let's force this issue. I wish young people are freaking out over climate change. And, you know, I think there's no question that human activity affects the climate, you know, affects the environment. We're going to do fine living with fluctuations in temperature. We're so good at innovating. You know, we have places like, you know, the Netherlands and whatnot. Like, we know how to deal with climate change, right? What young people really need to get exercised about is the fact that, you know, we're taking money from them every paycheck. They are relatively poor, and we're giving it to relatively wealthy old people. Like, that's where generational outrage should be. And, you know, I would love to see, like, you know,
conscientious objectors. Instead of class warfare, Nick is starting age warfare.
Yeah,
generational warfare.
Generational warfare. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I'm willing to be the Quisling of old people. You know, I'll be Medicare age in 5 years. So, like, let's do this, you know?
So I normally ask, what do you think is our largest cultural or societal problem? Is this it?
No. You know what I think it is? I think it's much bigger than that. And it's, ironically, it is a result of how much better the world is now. The biggest problem facing us is that we live in a world of massive existential angst. And we see this as a problem. It's actually the result of having created an economy, particularly in America, but throughout Europe and increasingly throughout the world, where people no longer, you know, when you are struggling merely to get ahead or to give your children opportunities you didn't have, your focus is different. We now live in a world where almost everybody has the ability to kind of create the world that they want to live in, that, you know, everybody can dream now in a way that, when, you know, my parents were born in the 20s, they were the children of immigrants. They grew up in immigrant ghettos. My father was born in Hell's Kitchen, grew up in Manhattan and Brooklyn, very poor, fought in World War II, never expected, you know, to have extra money. Mm-hmm. My mother, who was an Italian, the daughter of Italian immigrants, was similar. And, you know, when I look at what my kids are living in, like, everything is in front of you. And that is, we are not equipped for that. We have to be given the shot at, like, living the life that you imagine and you dream. And I think that's actually why people are going so crazy now about all sorts of bizarre culture war issues.
Like, because, too many options, or what is it?
Yeah, we have so many options, and it's like, okay, here's, you know, Easter just passed, and mm-hmm. I think a lot. There was a novel by Per Lagerkvist, who was a Swedish Nobel Prize winning author in the early 50s, called Barabbas, and it's what he does is he follows the story of Barabbas, the thief who is ransomed in place of Jesus, you know, mm-hmm. by Pontius Pilate. The crowd says, "Let Barabbas, who's a killer and a rapist and a thief, go free, and we want you to crucify Jesus instead." Mm-hmm. And this book follows Barabbas, he was condemned to death, and then suddenly he's given a free life where he can do whatever he wants. And it follows his journey. It's a great book. It's really wonderful. And it speaks, you know, it was a Christian existentialist novel, but it really speaks to our current predicament, if we want to call it that, where it's like, we have been given, you know, unbelievable freedom and opportunity in the U.S., in Europe, in yeah. more and more parts of the world, where more than half of the people on the planet now, according to the UN and to the Brookings Institution, live at a middle class or higher lifestyle. We can dream and we can work towards accomplishing our goals. And that is terrifying to a lot of people. You know, because it's
funny,
like,
because it sounds so optimistic.
It's very optimistic, you know? But yeah. You have to take responsibility and you have to work and you have to realize, like, you know, and I think about this with myself, what I wanted at 30 or 25 is not what mm-hmm. I want now. And how do you continue to grow? How do you continue to take responsibility for your life and help build the community you want? That's an awesome task. And I right. think we have not, you know, we haven't educated ourselves as a society to kind of create people who can flourish in that. There's a lot of people who are terrified of freedom in a lot of ways. In mm-hmm. the, you know, in the 60s, there were oftentimes on the left, there were people like Eric Fromm who, you know, wrote a book called Escape from Freedom. But as people became, you know, as things loosened up and you could live the life that you dreamed of, a lot of people are terrified by that. And that's actually what I think is going on now. People want to control other people rather than live their lives the way they want to. There's that, to me, is the biggest problem.
So interesting. I really never thought about that concept. Like, just because things are so good and we have so much freedom and so much space to do whatever you want, it causes existential angst because we're so used to being sort of funneled into what we're supposed to be doing. And when you have all the options, that does make it more complicated. That just, like, you know, choosing between all the many things you can be.
It's hard, you know, and it's like, that's what I think that's what education should be about. I think that's in a lot of ways what community, mm-hmm. You know, religion changes all the time and things like that. But it's like, you know, we need to adapt to a world in which much more is possible than that of our parents or grandparents or anything like that. And that requires, you know, letting people have more options and more autonomy, and mm-hmm. then, you know, also
making more mistakes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back on the Carol Markowitz Show.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and everybody. It's spring, and with the weather changing and so many great things coming up like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, I definitely need a fresh spring wardrobe for every occasion. This spring, I'm looking for that perfect flowy spring dress for Mother's Day, as well as replacing my everyday basics. That's what I love about JCPenney. They have so many stylish and comfortable options that I always find just what I'm looking for there. Spring is a feel-good season and comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. The fashion at JCPenney is the same way. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with styles that gets you, something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes, and Stafford and Mutual Weave for him, style and comfort for all, even big and tall. Plus even more for the whole family like Levi's and Exertion. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
You can work from the road while turning your vehicle into a powerful high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On a network that covers more roads than any other carrier, connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to see if you're eligible for a free trial today. Based on independent third-party data, always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Do you feel like you've made it?
No. Long way to go? Yeah. I mean, I certainly have not achieved what I want to in life. I'm happy. You know, I inherited from my parents and people around me a big work ethic, you know, where I get up every morning and I want to accomplish a bunch of things. I am a big fan of kind of practice and iteration. Writing is certainly an iterative process. Like you have to keep doing it. That's true of journalism in general. Mm-hmm. And I think it's true of almost everything. So I'm happy, relatively speaking. I'm getting married in September for the second Mazel time, tov. For the last time, I should say.
Nice.
And, you know, I have two children whom I love. I had a great relationship and a great marriage with my first wife. I've achieved a fair degree of professional success, and I'm happy about that, but I don't take any of it for granted. And it doesn't slow me down from like, okay, well, what, you know, that's all, you know, you don't want to sit on that. You want to figure out what do you do next and what is interesting, what's exciting. So I don't really feel like I made it, whatever that
is. All right. Well, looking forward to seeing where you go then, because yeah. I feel like, you know, that's a good answer. You still have a lot to do.
Yeah.
I love talking to you. This is really great. End Thank here you. With your best tip for my listeners on how they can improve their lives.
Oh, I think, you know, Stuart Brand, the guy who founded the Whole Earth Catalog, he said the line, stay hungry, stay foolish, which Steve Jobs used at a famous college commencement address. And I think thinking like that, Stuart Brand is a fascinating character. But, you know, the important thing is to remain open and honest with yourself, you know, and continue to develop new interests and new ideas, and to look at the future not as dangerous or scary, but it's, you know, it's different. It's going to be challenging, but it's like, God, the only thing I envy about my children is the fact that they're going to live longer and longer. And I want to be in that future because I am a long-term optimist and even kind of a middle-term optimist. And, you know, there are a lot of things to be concerned about in the world today, but it's like, you know, I know that I live in a world that was much better than the one my parents were born in. And I know the world is better than the one I was born in 1963. And I would love to see, you know, what, 2124 is going to look like or something like that. So
it's getting better all the time.
I think it's important to keep looking forward and keep moving.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, Nick. This is really great. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us on The Carol Markowitz Show. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You never want to find yourself out on the water fishing without the essentials. So it's best to always pack a Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite hoodie to protect against the sun. I mean, it provides great protection and it's really breathable so you don't get hot. That's a win-win. Columbia PFG has a lot of great gear. So before you head out on the water, head over to Columbia.com/PFG to shop their performance fishing gear.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200,000 for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does all the work for you. luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. Visit Picasso to see thousands of listings. That's PACASO.com.